Now we are back.
We are back.
Boop, boo, doo, doo. That's the victory trombone. I know. No, that's like the start of the race trombone. I think
Well,
it's a bugle, not a trombone.
that's fine. You can make that bugle, and then I'll hit the sad trombone again at the end of
Excellent.
this episode.
So we were talking in the last installment about kink as, or BDSM rather, not just kink, BDSM as performance, and having a slight difference of opinion, which is very exciting. I'm like, ooh, yeah.
Conflict.
Dun 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 dun. Anyway, so much for the fight music. Anyway, so we were. That's okay. That's fine. You don't have to laugh. It's cool. I'll just sit here feeling sad and uncomfortable. So
That makes me laugh.
I know. I was just like, you son of a bitch. Because I genuinely had the second of, wait, does that, does, but you know what that is, right? The Star Trek Center? Whatevs. Whatevs is cool. Whatever. And what I find fascinating is, you know, the we're going back and forth over the idea of whether or not, I think at the core of what the conflict is where does it become performance that is authentic versus a show of something versus we are going to do this action versus are you actually seeing a window into what it is that we really do? And I feel like your point is really valid because when people play, when they do a scene, etc., generally they're not worried about blocking. Blocking being the movement that you make on stage. Generally they're not worried about lighting. Generally they're not worried about how long the scene is going to take versus outside of we don't want the scene to go longer than the space is open. You know, so the number of restrictions that you have when you're doing a performance is very different. Now, my contention is then you make the environment for the performance suit your needs. And the example I was citing was this show that I'm now super fucking envious that you have seen and I have not yet, where it's several hours and that you as the audience member have a great deal of freedom to dictate what of the story you see. Which I find incredibly fascinating, super awesome. And so I'm thinking, why couldn't you do that with kink? Why couldn't you do that with BDSM? Why couldn't you have a situation where you had essentially a dungeon set up and you had 12 people, 14 people who are the players for that night? And basically they're coming in there. So you would be very much like a sex club, right? Where voyeurs can come in to watch and jerk off, but you take away that slimy veneer of you know, naked masturbation that can be very invasive, right? And can feel very gross and slimy, and you make it so that they are in a that the people who are watching are in a safer space. And I kind of feel like you could find people who are genuinely authentically kinky, who are genuinely authentically performative type of people who are storytellers, people who can convey emotion in a way that's truly authentic, who wanted to share what an actual scene feels like and what it sounds like and what you see and try to capture a bit of the what is the word for the stuff that is the ephemeral aspect of it, right? When we were talking in the last episode about watching someone watch someone else, you know, watching a sadist, you know, do terrible things to a masochistic person and just watch them writhe around and slowly tighten the rope, you know, around themselves till it was so restrictive they could barely breathe or whatever the fuck was going on. I contend people would be fascinated by that. And I think if you had the right people doing it and they knew why they were doing it and they were fully invested, it would be actually transformative performance. Like that's what I see it becoming.
Yes, and I agree with you that it would be, I feel very comfortable calling it transformative performance because it would still be a performance. Like the and the performance aspect of it, the performance aspect of it could never be ignored. And so that is a limiting factor.
How limiting how?
Because you have agreed to do a performance and you cannot back out of it.
Well, you could always back out of it. See that, I mean, that's the thing. Like if you were like, if you showed up at the venue that night and you were like, I'm just not feeling it. Part of your job would be to show up and be there and be like, I'm not feeling it. This is why I'm not doing it. And that becomes part of the piece. You know, it's not that people are necessarily expecting to see this one thing. It's like a sort of a, it's like a living soap opera, but without the soapiness. I don't know how else. But it would be like, I am still not, I'm having a hard time finding the words for it. I feel like a lot of what you do in kink, in BDSM, in all these interactions is performance. Because the goal of what we do is to elicit a response. You know, the goal for me to serve is not that the person I'm serving doesn't give a fuck. It's that I am doing a certain thing in a certain way and we establish ritual and protocol that are pleasing. That's a performance. It's not inauthentic. It's absolutely authentic, but it is a performance. If I were to hand someone a glass of water, I would not, you know, take three breaths and consider the moment and make sure that the handle's facing the right way and wipe the condensation off and make sure that there are 3 and not 10 ice cubes in the glass. All that shit is part of the performance of my duty. Right? It doesn't mean it's bullshit. It doesn't mean it's not sincere, but it means that it is crafted. It is designed to elicit a response. And I do not believe that makes it less authentic. Is it calculated? Yes, because the person that you're serving has decided that this calculated series of moves is erotic for them, is hot for them, gives them a sensation of control. They enjoy that you are following their orders to the letter. They're enjoying that the fact, oh, you didn't put 5 ice cubes in, there's only 4, so now you get to stand in a corner holding this penny to the wall for 10 minutes. And you will now perform that beautifully and gracefully. You know, whatever those things are. And so, you know, and maybe it's just part of my, like, life is theater and the world is a performative place, and as we move and as we breathe, we are ourselves bringing that to life. But I don't see it as, I guess maybe what I'm feeling is that maybe the performance aspect for you removes some of the sincerity or some of the grounding or some of the authenticity, perhaps.
I think it could remove a certain amount of the authenticity. Partially, I think that is because because I question the focus and whether or not the focus is split. So when you are, if you can position an act of service as being a performance, that is a performance that is focused on one person.
Right.
If you were then doing that in front of an audience, is your performance not split focused?
I don't believe so, because in the same way that if I'm doing a solo show and I'm talking to the audience, I look at each and every person there. If I'm doing a straight up play, those people don't exist.
And at that point, if you're doing a straight up play, your focus is on the person who you are engaging with in that moment, right?
Right. Yes.
But you do have an awareness of the audience because you have blocking.
Right. So you don't, this is the thing, you don't have to have blocking. If in this particular performance, let's say someone gets your back for 3 minutes, oh well. It's part of the issue of theater in the round, as you well know.
Yeah. And the times that I've done theater in the round, it hasn't actually been in the round. It's very often been like a severe thrust. It's been like a sort of a horseshoe or like a...
I'm sorry, I'm stuck on severe thrust.
I know. I was trying to think of another way to... another way to phrase it. And there really wasn't one.
There really isn't.
Like an alley stage, right? I've stage managed shows on alley stages. I've stage managed shows on like semicirculars with like crazy out into the audience proscenium's thrust stages.
You don't have to like make the voice all like extras.
I don't know. I kind of think I do. Theater of the Round. Site specific. I've done all of that stuff, and I've worked on shows that use all of those different types of staging.
Right.
And like at some point, if somebody has your back, if I'm seeing a show, if I'm working on a show that has blocking where an actor has somebody's back, that actor is not the focus of that moment.
Correct.
So, to me, if you are doing a performance and you are the focus of that moment, you won't let the audience have your back for that long.
Right, but let us theorize that you don't give a fuck about whether the audience can see or not.
Then you're not doing a performance.
But the audience is still there.
Audience could be there or not. Then we're right back to you having a scene in the middle of a dungeon and somebody saying that they found your scene entertaining.
Yeah, but then the place and time is different, right? I'm saying you can have the best of both worlds. You can have people who are there who can be entertained or not, I don't care, but I am willing to say I will make this as authentic as possible for you, and to that end, I'm not going to really give a fuck if you can see it or not. And do the thing you're there to do and go home.
Okay, so really then the difference is that you are doing a scene, you are engaging with someone in a formally constructed space. But that's, to me, that is still different than it, that is still different than it being a performance.
I would say it's a different kind of performance than one would be accustomed to. Yeah.
Sure. Okay. I can almost get with
I
that.
know you still don't like it.
I still don't like it a whole bunch. Because even when I think about Sleep No More, all of the performers at Sleep No More have a track that they follow
Right.
for the entire however long the night goes, like 8 or 9 hours or some craziness. Inside of that track, they have space, from my understanding, inside of that track, they have space where they can play with the audience a bit. They can shift their focus. They can divert themselves for, X number of time, and then they can X amount of time, and then they can catch up with their performance track.
Right. So they have freestyle and time.
They do have some time to freestyle. But that's still super constructed. They can't just in the middle of that thing say, you know what, I'm done for the night. I'm just gonna sit down with this one audience member who I think is super fine and just get them drunk. So everybody else have a good show. You just have to do this without Macduff. Like that can't happen.
I want that to happen,
Well, it's a nice idea, right? It's a nice idea that it could happen. And were that to happen, it moves what somebody is experiencing, I think, away from theater and more into, say, a kind of, I mean, one could call it performance art, but one would sound like a fucking knob if one did.
though.
So, but it, maybe more, it makes me think of kind of late 60s into the 70s performance happenings.
Yeah, see, that's exactly where my brain started to go. Like, dude is going to be like living in a storefront for a month or something.
Happenings, I mean, it's interesting, right? Because happenings are one thing, and site-specific, like long-term performance, is another thing. Happenings tended to be, at least from the reading that I've done and the education that I had, they tended to be a little bit more free form, a little bit more chaotic. They were less structured. They probably had more of like a Dadaist kind of feel, like a really sort of an anarcho chaotic, like, let's get a whole bunch of people in the room and then all the clothes will come off and we'll rub bacon grease all over each other. And that dude over there is playing the harmonica and there's another dude with a triangle. And then there's some painting happening and, oh, listen, poetry. And it just sort of went on and on and on and in a sort of pursuing an ecstatic state,
Right.
right? But pursuing an ecstatic state inside of a very like unstructured system. You know, in opposition to that, you've got somebody like Joseph Beuys, who was actually one of my favorite performance artists, who did, I think that Joseph Beuys did things with performance that like really radically changed the way that people think about time-based work. You know, living in the, I'm pretty sure it was the MoMA, living in the MoMA with a
Right.
coyote for a month,
Right.
right?
With a coyote.
Wearing felt and fat. Like, this was an amazingly ordered, structured system that he was functioning within that had hard and fast rules that he couldn't break. Now, that still constitutes performance art. It's not a happening. But if we're talking about, we're talking about this kind of performance, and I guess where I start going like, no, it's we're either talking about sceneing in front of people, or we're talking about a performance in front of people. And to my mind, I think they are radically different things, because if you are sceneing in front of people, then you absolutely do not care that there are people there.
Right.
If you are performing in front of people, you absolutely care that there are people there.
So what you're saying is the scene cannot itself ever become performance. Because.
No, the scene can become performance, at which point it ceases to be a scene.
This is getting all like, because part of me feels like, well, if you say it's performance, it is, right? If you say, like, if you
Sure.
say we're doing this scene as a performance, it doesn't matter what specifically happens. It matters the intention. And the intention is to permit people to see something that they would not ordinarily see. Now, how they see it is where I think we're coming up against a performance thing, because I wouldn't want to ever do something like that. For example, if I was like, okay, now we're going to do this thing where you have a 5-hour window in which you as the audience can come and go. You may or may not see some kinky shit, or you might just hear people at the food table talking for an hour about whether or not these cheese cubes are fresh. And not have it be scripted, not have the whole point of it be to entertain or anything else, but to have it be a performance. So but I guess it sounds like that you don't feel as though having audience there and having any intention to acknowledge that there's audience there can keep it an authentic scene.
I feel like I have a hard time. I'm going to say it like this. I have a very difficult time imagining someone who could be having a scene in front of an audience that has gathered to watch that scene and not be aware of that audience in the middle of what they're doing.
I will say, having had situations where things have shifted radically around me and I have not been at all aware of them, and not because I was blindfolded and couldn't see, but because my attention was focused elsewhere very intensely, it can happen.
Right, but in that situation, are you talking about a situation where an audience was gathered specifically to watch you, that you then walked out in front of and started what you were doing?
Not sure that that's very different than walking into a crowded dungeon, unpacking your shit, putting it on the floor, and standing there when there's people 3 feet from you, with a red plastic solo cup, sipping water, looking you up and down, going, all right, let's see the naked girl get beat.
The difference is the difference is the formal intention of gathering to watch something, as opposed to entering into a space where anything can be watched.
Well, that's true, but one could argue that their voyeurs are there specifically for that reason. For example, a power exchange in San Francisco, which is a I don't even know if it's open at this point, but at the time was a sex club with an SM sort of themed thing going on, right? So there was room to play and players would come and play, but there were people who were definitely there just to masturbate and watch. And those people essentially were audience because that's why they were there. They were there to stand there and look at you do your thing.
Oh, I was just going to interrupt you there and say, no, they're not an audience. They are voyeurs, and that is different.
How is an audience different from voyeurs?
In the same way that somebody who puts on a latex outfit for a fashion show isn't a latex fetishist.
Okay. But they are doing very similar things. I suggest that the difference in this particular situation might be academic.
Doesn't mean it's not true. Like, it doesn't mean it's not valid. It's the same thing with somebody saying, oh, that's just semantics. It's like, well, yes, it is semantics, because semantics is the meaning of words. So I am, in fact, talking about semantics because semantics are fucking important.
Well,
so in the same way, to me, this sort of thing actually is kind of important. The intention of those people who are watching,
right,
the reason that those people are there affects the entire dynamic, the entire feeling of everything that is going on.
So, well, it certainly would. But the thing is that I think that the meta intention is that they're there to watch is the same. Now, whether or not they're there to watch and be titillated or there to watch and sit politely with their hands folded on their lap, that's another layer, right? Because at that point, something different happens to the person who's aroused by what they see, who's going there specifically to be aroused. That is different. But I suggest that an audience coming to see a show are pretty much voyeurs. There's not much difference. They're there to watch something that is to give them some sort of reaction, some sort of response. They're there to be stimulated somehow, visually, orally, mentally, emotionally, whatever that is.
Now, because they're there and taking exactly the same actions as somebody who is a voyeur, they are therefore voyeurs. Their enjoyment is elevated to the point of fetishization.
It could be.
Okay, I want to throw us all the way back to the first podcast that we had, talking about Paula Deen.
Paula Deen.
And her plantation wedding. Does right. that mean that if she had hired non-service submissive people to fill the roles of the servers at that event, that they would then be submissive?
They would be submissive to money. Yes, they would be submitting themselves to a particular form of humiliation with the reward of cash. Now, I would not normally use that terminology because there's better terminology, but I don't think they're mutually exclusive. And I think that there is some performance that does have that voyeuristic quality to it, that I am hiding, I am the fly on the wall. I am hearing the private shit that I'm not supposed to be hearing, you know? And you've probably seen those shows where there's some scenes in shows where you just feel creepily uncomfortable, like you're not even supposed to be there. And I love those moments on stage because they're so rare, you know, because most theater is pretty declamatory. It's like, and here is the thing. Versus that sensation that maybe you are intruding on these characters' private fucking lives. And I wonder if you would not have that sensation to an even higher extent if you were genuinely seeing some shit that you would not normally see.
Okay, so I guess then this is where we run into perhaps an essential point of conflict where I never feel that way about theater because I'm always working it. And I spent so much time... How do I put this? I spent so much time watching theater, but not being engaged with it because of my job. So my perception of theater is it's, I can't remember the last time that I got sucked into a moment like that between characters on stage.
Huh.
I can remember a time when I have been sucked into people. Like there have been times when I've been caught up in a moment, which is a person and a person, but not not a character. Does that make sense? Now, again, I want to, like, very categorically state this is not optimal. This is a result of 15 some odd years being the person who always knows where the cigarette is placed that person is going to smoke when they're having the stress moment. So when the stress moment hits, I don't care. All I care about is the cigarette got lit, right? Like,
See, but do you feel that way when you are topping and you're in a scene, even though you know what's going to happen next? Even if it's just 10 seconds before it happens because you are running the show?
no.
And
But that's because I'm an engager and I'm not an observer. Like, I can only speak about theater from the perspective of an observer because I've never been an engager. And when I have been an engager in theater, like the times that I've had to stage manage from on stage, I've played myself. I've been myself. I haven't even played myself. I've been myself, which means I'm the sort of like big surly tattooed guy on stage who doesn't give a shit and pushes the buttons. So that maintains.
and I'm incredibly fascinated by this because as a performer and literally not remembering a time when I wasn't, right? I've been performing since I was like 4. I absolutely invest completely in those moments, and it makes me kind of sad to think that there's that there are people for whom that wears off. That you're just sitting there going, oh yeah, but now she's gonna do this next thing or this next thing or this next thing, because to me that's part of what is amazing about.